Alam ko ay epende. Kaya patisin. Bobby Lee here. Come see me live. I will be in Omaha, Nebraska this weekend, January 24th, 25th at the Funny Bone. I've never been there, so please fucking come.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be at Sheenberg, Illinois, February 13th to the 16th at the Chicago Improv, San Jose, California, February 28th through the March 1st at the San Jose Improv, Denver, Colorado, March 12th to the 14th at the Comedy Works, Houston, Texas.
Houston.
March 27th to the 29th, Houston Improv.
Mm-hmm.
Go to BobbyLee.com and grab them before they're gone.
Or check BobbyLeeLive.com. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Have you had a small dick before?
Mm-hmm. They're my favorite.
Why? Why?
Like little,
they're like little candies?
Well, they're kind. They don't fuck your vagina.
Yeah. Oh, they don't. Yeah, yeah. They don't
a little pressure. And giving you, when I give head to a smaller dick, I feel like a fucking queen.
Yeah, because you can get it all the way to the balls.
Yeah.
I have TMJ too, so you can't give me the anything above it.
Look,
I have vagina what? Types myself, but you know, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
I already know what kind of vagina.
Go ahead.
Everything.
No, my vagina changed.
All pretty,
my perception. Go ahead. My perception.
Five. No jazz four, fingers. 3, 2, 1.
Smile. If your heart is breaking, smile. Something, 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 smile. Hey, Whitey, what are you looking at? Whitey, when I'm performing, Whitey,
yes, sir.
Right, you pay attention to every detail. I love you, and thanks for changing. You know what I mean? For the last 400 years, you guys have been acting wild. And over time, especially now, you guys have changed a bit. Thank you so much for that. Because now we get to make some money, too. I'm going to introduce people in the fucking room. Gab. This is Gilbert's handicapped sister. She came in here in a little tiny yellow bus, a little helmet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she doesn't speak English. She's just like a tiki statue. Look at her. Just standing there. You know what I mean? If you put another two of
you put me on top of her.
Oh,
you got a tiki. Yeah.
If there was an island and I saw that tiki statue.
My whole family?
Of your whole family, I would leave.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, we got Kalila, my girlfriend of 7 years.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah.
Marry her already.
Damn,
shut
right.
the fuck up.
Got real.
At least for the SAG medical insurance.
Yeah. Until I say you're fucking. We got this guy, Gilbert. We got George Kimmel the III. Why white people do that? Like you have to say, there's three of us.
Mm-mm, Filipinos do it too. I had a friend named 6 and 7.
They go that far back?
That's ridiculous.
I also have a friend named Jingle.
Okay.
And Twinkle. So Filipinos just go wild with it.
All right, babe. Yeah. Fuck Jingle and Twinkle, man.
That's their government name, too. It's not like a...
This guest I have a history with.
Mm.
It's a positive one. And it's a history of... it started off with a little weird.
Whoa.
It started off real weird. I think that I took it wrong. I should have been more understanding about it. But I want to, because, you know, I'm in therapy and, you know, I went through a lot of trauma. I had a hard childhood and I was resilient enough to get out of that and to carve out a career for myself. This next lady is so resilient. She had a tough upbringing. She is so resilient. She is one of the biggest comedy movie stars in the biz right now. She's killing the game. We did a show together for Comedy Central where I was sweating yellow gook blood.
Damn, that's
I was cut. Sweating yellow gook blood when she was on stage. I remember, just out of my little dick,
And I was squirting. Like, whispering. I was like, pull your dick out.
Yeah, pull your dick out. She was. She is just very talented, so funny. Tiffany Haddish, everybody, clap your hands.
Hey. She ready.
Yeah. How did we first meet?
The first time we met officially was in front of the Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
I was doing Comedy Playground with Kevin Hart and Chris Spencer and everybody. And Pookie was executive producing it. And Pookie wanted to do like a prank kind of show. And so I was dressed up kind of like Butch-like. And you had came to the club. You were going to do a spot on our show. And you came up with your girlfriend at the time. This was like probably 12 years ago. Yeah, a long time ago. And I was the prank was I was gonna say that you were calling my girlfriend and I'm about to beat your ass. Right. And he was fucking scared
because I didn't really know her, right?
No, you didn't know me at all.
Yeah, so I got scared, and then I go, "Who the fuck is that?"
Yeah, you were freaking. You was fucking scared. Yeah, I was like, man, you out here calling my girl, talking to your pussy. I eat that pussy. Like, you don't do that. She don't want your dick. Oh, egg roll, motherfucker.
So imagine. So now imagine.
Like, I don't know you. I don't know your girl. You know who the fuck you are.
So then, right, you know, I have this thing of, and it's a part of my character defects, I guess, but I go, what's her name? She just embarrassed me, right? And then somebody said Tiffany Haddish. And I stored that, right?
Yeah, and he's like, I fucking hate Tiffany Haddish. I fucking hate time and definite. And then every time I would see you, no more was I dressed like a butch lesbian or anything. And I'm like, hey, it's me. Hey, Bobby, it's me, Tiffany. Like, man, that was funny, huh? You're like, I don't like you. Get out my face.
Right.
Leave me alone. That was fucked up what you did. And I'm like, I apologize. It was just a prank. It's not real.
I know. I'm sorry, but, you know, but... But because, but she is, right, for years, she was so nice to me.
Yeah, well, I was nice. I met you before that, but you didn't, I don't think you remember.
Oh,
I was really young at the comedy store.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I would be like, you're the funniest Asian guy I know. And you're like, thanks. And then you just walk away. Weird ass black chick.
But, you know, there came a time maybe 3 or 4 years after that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I mean, running into her like, you know, 12 times a year, she's just so sweet and saying hi to me. Even sometimes I wouldn't even say hi back.
Yep.
She kept doing it. Baby, I'm sorry.
Constantly killing him with the kindness.
Yeah.
Killing him with the kindness. And then finally he's like, who the fuck are you, really?
Yeah.
So we had a little conversation. And then we've been cool ever since.
We've been cool ever since. And this is way before, you know, her explosion.
Yeah,
you know?
Before. I was definitely unemployed.
Yeah. But, you know, you grew up, like, where did you grow up?
In South Central Los Angeles.
Where?
In the hood.
In the hood,
South Central. Like,
but were your parents there? No,
no, right? So my mom was there for a while. Then she had a car accident. My father had took off when I was 3 because he was selling green cards illegally. He's from Eritrea, which is the east side of Africa. And, so there was all that going on. And when my mom had the car accident, I was taking care of my brothers and sisters that she had from another husband that ended up leaving her and us. And so, like, my baby brother was calling me mom for a long time. We ended up going into foster care, and I was moving around a lot. There's a lot of abuse and whatnot. So my grandma finally got custody of us, and I ended up in the Laugh Factory comedy camp, and my whole world changed. My whole perspective changed.
So it was the Laugh Factory comedy camp.
Jamie.
97.
1997. Jamie then, huh?
Yeah, Jamie Masada. I consider him like my father. I consider him, but that's my hero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing because he does the, he feeds the homeless during Thanksgiving.
Yep.
Christmas as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He does the comedy camp where he does that. I remember going in as a guest, you know, speaker and speaking there. And, you know, you can say what you want about Jamie Masada. He is a giver, man.
Yeah, good person. Yeah. I've seen him bail a lot of people out of jail and him never pay him back. And I'm like, will you bail me out of fuck? He's like, buddy, you never go to jail. You don't do stupid shit, okay? Don't do stupid stuff.
Yeah. Wow. And so, but then you went in that comedy class, you just decided, because you probably used humor as a defense mechanism.
It was it's my mask. It's the thing. It's my weapon. You know, yeah. It's what I use to protect myself. I remember when I first got put into foster care and they couldn't find a home for me. They found one for my sisters, found one for my brothers, but nothing for me. So I had to go to McLaren Hall, which is like in El Monte. Mm-hmm. And that place has changed a lot since then, but it's like kind of like a prison and it's psych ward. And it's crazy. So I'm in this room.
How old were you?
I was 12, 13 years old. God. And it's in a room kind of like this size where there's bunk beds and all this. And there's these mean girls. And it was scary. It was very scary. So I used my comedy to keep from getting my ass beat. Still got handled a little bit, but still didn't get murdered or nothing. But you know, I used it with bullies. I used it with teachers. I didn't read very well, barely at all. And so I used my comedy to get people to read to me. I have, like, excellent memory. So somebody would read something to me, I memorize it. And then if they asked you to read out loud, I would just recite what they said. And the teacher would be like, no, you're in the wrong paragraph. And I'd be like, I got to use the bathroom. Yeah. Like, I always used, like, my skills of comedy to get out of situations and help me get through life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I did the same thing as a kid, you know. I would fart in class, mm-hmm. right? And then do a little funny dance, you know what I mean? I would go to church every once in a while, and my friends would be sitting next to me, and I'd be staring at their eyes, and then they would look down and my penis is out.
And then you'd be like, put your coochie down.
Yeah, yeah. So like, I would.
Because you couldn't read?
No, not because I was a read. No, it's just I use
Asian. He can fucking.
I can read as
fuck,
bro.
He can do calculus by 7.
Give me two pieces of wire and a piece of metal, I can make an iPad in fucking 5 minutes, okay?
Damn, bro.
All right, anyway, I'm fucking bright, bro. Mm.
Yeah.
But I used, you know what I mean, because of all this trauma in my life, I would just go out and just make people laugh. And then, you know, if people bullied me, I would make a joke. And I'd figure it out in that way. But it's like, it's a survival skill. And luckily, there's a fucking job you can do with people like us.
Yes, yeah. And when I discovered that, I was like, wow, okay, this is how I'm gonna make a living. And till I was like 18, I was doing stand-up. And then when I got emancipated from foster care, my grandmother wasn't getting a check anymore. And I got accepted into NYU, but I didn't know how am I gonna pay $40,000 a semester? That's a lot of dick to suck. Like, I don't know if I want an education that bad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I was always taught never owe anybody anything. Like, so never borrow money or nothing like that. So when they were telling me about financial aid and that you would have to pay that back, I'm like, well, I can't do that unless somebody just gives me the money. And that's not something, and that's still to this day, don't just accept money for nothing. Like, I feel like I have to earn it, work for it, you know, in some kind of way, shape, or form, so no one can come back to me later like, you owe me this or you got to do me this favor. Because I've seen that so much in my childhood of people getting killed for things like that.
Wow. You know?
So I didn't want that type of association with money. So I went to Santa Monica Community College. Yeah, I was homeless. I was sleeping on this couch, that couch. Got me a job working at an airline. Finally got my own place, like, and all these things. And I ended up homeless like 3 different times. And I felt like that was God teaching me how not to be afraid to ask for help when you need the help.
Yeah. It's hard to ask for money, especially in this business when you're struggling.
Yeah.
And I did it a couple of times.
I only asked Jamie for money. That's the only person I've ever asked for money, ever asked for any kind of financial aid. And he's the only person that I've ever trusted to loan me money. And I know I can pay him back when I can. Mm-hmm. And he's still going to love me regardless. He's still going to respect me anyways, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have, you know, I have a couple of those as well. You know what I mean? That, believe it or not, Carlos Mencia was my guy. I would like go to his house and go, I can't pay my rent. Hey, dude. All right, dude, how much you need?
And then let me have 5 of your jokes. Never mind, I'll just take them. Don't worry. We're even. Don't pay me back. I already made that one. That's 2 comedy shows ago.
But he would literally just, you know, because he would sell merch. Mm-hmm. So he had a merch box of money, right? He would just give me $500 and I think I still owe him money. He never asked for it back, but like those little gestures, you know what I mean, when you're fucking struggling, because this in the beginning, you know.
Yeah, it's a struggle.
You get known for a decade.
Yeah.
No money.
Nothing. $10, maybe $50 here.
Yeah.
$40, $50, $100. You know, when Kevin gave me that $300, I was like, oh, shit, I got to pay him back. I don't want him to ask me to suck his dick or something. You
know, like, that's a little dick, like, though. That's a little dick.
I don't know what that dick does. But I know I was just trying to figure out how to pay him back. And over the years, I always try. And he'd be like, no, use that money to get better headshots. Use that money to like, get a better outfit so you can, like, book a gig. Like, yeah, use that money. Like, he would always, like, tell me what to do with the money. And then, finally, once we did night school together, it was this back and forth of me trying to pay him back and him putting it in my wig caps or putting it in my shoe.
Wow.
Like, it was constantly
going back
and forth.
He must be so proud of you, huh?
I hope so.
Oh, he is.
I mean, he's definitely a big brother to me.
Yeah. You know, when I drive down a street and I see sometimes somebody that I know on a billboard, I have this immense anger for some reason.
Right. Jealousy.
It's jealousy, right?
Did you ever feel that?
Never.
But with you, when I see you, I just go, it brightens my fucking day.
That's my intention. That's been my intention from the beginning. Like, if someone sees me, I just want them to feel joy. If you see, like, even just if it's a picture or whatever, I just want people to feel joy. Like, that's my intention with everything, because I feel so much, I have felt so much pain, so much anger in my existence, that if I can, like, create joy for others, wow, then that would be, I could die tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I'm good. And to hear you say that, I could die tomorrow and I'll be happy.
Wow. No, it really does, because it's like, like, you see certain people, like, when Jim Carrey was huge, mm-hmm, and you'd watch his movies and you would go, yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Right.
I get it.
Right.
But I feel the same with you. Your level of talent, I've seen it.
Thank you.
I saw it before, right? So you see it and you go, yeah, right? But not only that, it's, I just know how hard she worked, you know? Sometimes you see, dude, you know, you see.
I know.
You know, sometimes you're, you see, like, you know.
What the fuck? But I'm happy for him.
I'm happy.
I'm always happy for everybody.
Yeah.
Unless they did something really bad to me. And then I'm just like, well, I don't understand how that worked out. But that doesn't usually happen too often, where someone who's bad to me ends up being successful.
Yeah.
God don't like ugly, and I pray. I pray that God take care of them and handle them. And usually he put them in jail.
But is it, no, because I knew you then, and then now, I mean, what, because I see you with Selma Hayek movie, you know, this and that, do you, when you show up on a set, do you get nervous, or are you just now, I'm comfortable? And
I'm always excited. I'm always excited. And maybe that really is nervousness, but it's, I call it excitement. This energy that, like, goes through my body, and I'm like, this is my opportunity to bring more joy.
Oh my!
That's how I look at it. You know, like, everybody does. Everybody gets opportunities to do things, but everyone doesn't take advantage of those opportunities.
Wow! Because when I book something, not as, you know, I've done a couple of things.
You've done a lot of things.
A couple of things. You know what I mean? I my heart is revenge.
Yeah.
Hold up now. I do get on these the marketing people about, like, hey, can you make sure there's a billboard in this area and a billboard in that area, a billboard over here? And they're like, why there so specifically? I'm like, there's an ex that lives over here who told me I wasn't gonna do shit, and I want them to see that I'm doing shit.
You guys are on the same page about the billboard stuff, because he's all about the billboard stuff too.
Because when I was on Splitting Up Together, they were doing promotional shots. And it was only for the family. I was on the show, but they're like, we're just going to do the family. I go, just put me in the background and then put the fucking billboard against Warner Brothers, because I know three dudes that always drives by there that I don't like. You know what I mean? And I just need them to see this. See this, you know what I mean? It's not out of a hatred. It's just, I just wanted to show that, hey, you know what I mean? Yeah. I did it too.
Yeah.
I accomplished what you thought I couldn't.
Yeah. But you fucking did it.
Yeah.
I mean, with the Gerard Kaimichael show.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Wait, is that story true about the Jerrod Carmichael show about how you went into and sat and read for somebody else at first?
Yep.
Rehearsed, right?
You- yep. I was just doing a rehearsal for them, their table read. Yeah. And then they were like, can you come to the rehearsal? And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll do the rehearsal. And I was like, yeah, the girl who's hired for this part is doing a play. She's going to be here for the actual pilot. And I was like, okay, cool, whatever. I'm here to help. Like, and my friends are on that show, you know, the David Alan Greer, who's someone who was a mentor to me at the comedy camp, Gerard, who I seen struggle, the holes in his shoes, yeah, and all that shit. So I was super happy for him. And I had approached him maybe 3 months before, like, oh, I heard about your show. You didn't let me come in and audition or nothing, but you say you respect my comedy. You wouldn't let me audition. That's fucked up, Gerard. But if you need help with anything, please. I will be a PA. I will be an extra. I will, like, read lines with you, whatever you need me to do. And so then they called me in to just stand in, basically.
Just for the table read?
Just for the table
read. And some rehearsals.
And a rehearsal. And then it ended up turning into a rehearsal after the table read. And then the girl came back. And on that same day, I had an audition for Craig Robinson's show that was coming out at that
The season. Ghost one.
Not the ghost one. No, the teacher one.
Oh, the teacher one.
Yeah, like the knockoff of Steve Harvey show. And so I went in and auditioned for that, and I was looking really cute, and I thought, oh, let me stop by. And Lil Rel, who's a very good friend of mine,
love him,
told me that he was bringing his kids into town for the pilot. So I went and stopped by the soundstage. It was on the same lot, just to say hi and to see the kids and everything, and the kids weren't there. And Rel's like, oh, yeah, they're not going to be here till tomorrow. And the girl was there who actually got the part, and Loretta Devine and David Alan Greer came up to me, and they're like, we need you. This is gonna be good. Like, and then the girl comes up to me and she's like, I just want to say thank you so much for you know, standing in for me. I got it from here. You don't need to be here. Thank you, I appreciate you. And I was like, okay, you're welcome, no problem. Anytime you need me to stand in, I'm here for you.
Yeah.
And I leave the set, and when I leave, I get a phone call asking me if I wanted the role.
Wow.
Did you have to see her again after that?
I've seen her several times since then. I just saw her. I just did Good Times. Just did Good Times Live, and she was on the lot where we were shooting it, and she was like, "I don't know if you remember me." I was like, "Oh, I remember you. I never forget you." And she was like, I just want to say, I'm so proud of you. You just took it and ran with it. But I know that she's lying because I seen her Facebook page and her talking shit.
Yeah.
But it is what it is.
It is what it is.
I accepted it when she said what she said. I said, well, thank you. You know, I'm proud of you too for whatever you're doing. Congratulations.
But you know what? This proves, right, that when you say yes to help somebody out, right, even if you think it's beneath you, even if it's like, you know, you don't think that something might come out of it, you just do it to do it.
Yeah.
And to learn, right? You probably went in there as like, I want to learn how to do table read.
Yeah.
I want to learn how to do rehearsals.
I just want it to be a part. I just want, like, I'm the type of person, I want to be there for my friends. I want to help my friends in any way, shape, or form. If the people that I care about can be successful and triumphant too, and if a little bit of help from me does that, great. At the time, I was already on the show with Tyler Perry. I was doing If Loving You Was Wrong, which was a drama, you know, and, you know, Tyler does not release people from contracts, but he released me.
Wow.
Because he thought it was a better opportunity for me.
Oh, and what a good
and
dude.
And then the car that I pulled up in today, Tyler Perry bought that for me.
What?
Because I'm always like, well, if you need me, let me know, whatever you need. And like, I did that movie, Nobody's Fool, with him.
Yeah.
And it went pretty good. And he's like, you deserve this, Tiffany. Like, because I never want to spend my money on things that devalue. So, like,
Yeah.
What kind of car are you driving? I'm like, a Volkswagen. He's like, why are you driving a Volkswagen? I'm like,
yeah.
Because.
Did you buy a house?
I bought it outright. Yeah, and I bought a house. Second season of Carmichael Show, I bought my house. And everybody's like, I don't know why you would do that. You shouldn't wait. You should wait till like season four. And I was like, well, a bitch been homeless a few times. I'd rather try to figure out how to pay a mortgage than pay somebody rent and make them rich.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I bought that house, and I paid it off within like 2 years.
Wow.
Like, from doing the Carmichael Show, and then the check that I got from Girls Trip is what paid it off.
Wow. So, but Girls Trip,
that was the thing that, boom,
that was the thing.
The park, yeah.
Because in my head, I'm like, you know, no matter, because you're great, but sitcoms, especially nowadays, it's very difficult to pop off of a sitcom.
Yeah.
They don't even last.
Yeah, but I was a favorite character on the show.
Yeah,
so,
and
it got me enough exposure where I got to do that movie Keanu with Key and Peele.
Yeah.
And so that was good, and that led into, you know, working with those people on that set and being nice to everybody and hanging out with the crew. And I would hang out with the crew because I wanted to learn, what are you doing? Like, so what goes into set design? What goes into this? Hey, you guys want to go to a comedy show after this? I found a comedy club in New Orleans. And I'm like, is it a real club? No, it's somebody's house, but we're going to go.
Yeah.
And they would come with me to like parties and clubs and stuff like that. And so then when Girls Trip came across for them to do set deck and sound and DPing and all this, they're like, and they worked on Keanu and they're like, man, I read this script. It reminds me so much of you when we hung out with you. Like, so 8 different crew members sent me the script before I even got an audition. And then I told my agent, like, you guys got to get me in for this. And they're like, well, they want to see a name. I said, well, you tell them that I've had a name since 1979 and it's Tiffany motherfucking Haddish.
Woo!
And I'm coming with the heat. I'm going to bring it. They wrote, whoever wrote this wrote about me.
Yeah. Like,
so then I got in there. I had to audition 4 times.
What?
And the final audition was like through Skype. And that was uncomfortable for me because, you know, I'm used to Skype sex things. Like, take this off, show a nipple. And so I told the director, like, this is uncomfortable. If I start to like unbutton my shirt, tell me to stop. Remind me where I'm at. Like,
yeah.
And so he said, the director said he watched every audition 5-10 times. And he said every time, even though he knew what I was going to say, it made him laugh. And he thought, yeah, this is probably the person I need to hire.
Wow.
Even though she doesn't have the name.
Mm-hmm. But sometimes names, right? It's like, am I going to get Vivica A. Fox for a comedy? And she's great.
Mm-hmm.
Or even an unknown Tiffany Haddish. If I looked at both on a screen, right, I think as a director, I would have to go with what my gut said, which is mm-hmm. If it's for a comedy part, I'd be that, whatever her name is, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And what she said about, what you said about hang out with the Grips and the cameraman, all that stuff, it's like, I just started, like before I used to shoot things, I would just be isolated. I wouldn't talk to anybody and I would just do it and then leave. But you know, the reason why I'm going to Hawaii next week for a 4th Magnum PI is because of the fact that they told me, they go, the crew really loves you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're like a morale boost.
Yeah, they go, you really brighten up the set because now I'm so old. No, I am. I'm almost 50, right?
Not that old.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't, you know, really, you know, I think, you know, I see young Asian kids blowing the fuck up and I'm fine with it now. And I'm just at a different time in my life. So now I fart on people on set. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
I'm at a different time in my life. I fart on people. I take my dick out.
No, I don't do that because, you know what I mean? But yeah. I like, you know what I mean?
Sexual harassment.
Yeah, yeah. It's different.
No.
It's different.
But like, I'll do a take and I'll start talking. I'll go, stop. And I'll do a fart, right? And everyone will laugh, right? And then the cast members are, ooh, and they'll walk off the, you know?
Well, that one time, though, you got a little pissed on set the last time he was in Hawaii. Some dude, and I know he probably had a personal vendetta against you. He went over to Bobby, uh-huh. and he plucked out a white mustache, and he was like, ugh. He's like, finally. And
touched
like,
your face?
Off. Yeah.
No, not only did they do that, like, even the producers came up to me, dude, are you okay? Because he just comes up to me, and he takes a plier, right? And I have this one... John John, I call it, a white hair.
But you were close to John John.
Yeah, I love John John. I was growing him out extra long, and he just goes, plank, and ripped it out of my face, and it hurt bad. And he goes, ah! Like that. And then he laughed. Ah,
and he was bragging to the whole crew, you see what I did?
This is a John John. And they were like, that's not okay.
That was a crew
that's
member?
That's not okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh?
It was a crew member?
No, he was the head of AD.
Oh, he was ahead.
He was a yeah.
Oh, he probably couldn't stand. The light probably was reflecting off of John. Distracting everything. Fuck, it's fucking up my shot. It looks like lint.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That was a little weird, but see, that's why he did it. It's because I fuck around so much and I love everyone so much that they think that they can do that, which is fine.
Yeah.
Let it go. Yeah.
But I've gotten like a majority of my work has come because of the relationship I have with crew members. Like pretty much I would say all my work.
Yeah.
It's like some crew members, some, you know, producers like, oh, I worked with Tiffany Haddish. She's great. She's going to show up on time. She's going to know her shit. She's going to be funny. She's going to deliver. Like, whatever we ask her to do, she's going to try her best to deliver it. And the crew's going to love her. Like, so let's do it. And yes. That's how I got majority of my work.
That's the fucking key of it.
It's relationships.
It's relationships. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I never got that. It's like, you know, I told this before. Like, you know, I did one line on a David Spade movie in the summer, and that's how I got Magnum, because mm-hmm. I ran into a guy in a restaurant, and he goes, "I'll write you a little part." And I went, "Okay." And I showed up, and I, you know, fucked around, and I hugged the craft service people. You know what I mean? I hug the cameramen when I see them. And
I always make friends with the cameramen.
Yeah.
They make you look good.
Yeah.
The DP and the camera, the crew, that's the most important, I feel like. Then the producers. Yeah. Then craft services. And the gaffers. You know? Them hair and makeup. Yeah.
But it's the, you know, it's the positivity and all that stuff. And, you know, back in the day when, you know, guys like Val Kilmer, I've read things, you know what I mean, where they just fucking... You know what I mean? We're so rude. They wouldn't leave the trailer for a whole day. Like during the Island of Dr. Moreau, Marlon Brando wouldn't leave his trailer until Val Kilmer left his trailer first. And so they both didn't leave. Right? And so they lost a day. That might work when you're on fire. But there's going to come a time when you lose your juice.
Yeah.
And then they're like, you're out.
Yeah, because you cost money. Instead of making the money, you're costing the money. I have protested before and stayed in a trailer, but it was about, like, you know, it's all these men producing this thing for women, and you guys don't understand what... This is not how women talk. And we need to... You guys got to rewrite this. I'll even sit down with the writers and rewrite this, but this is not how women talk. And I'm not going to put out something that's gonna be like, well, women are like, well, why the fuck would Tiffany do this? Yeah. Like, what the? Why would she put us back like this?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
So,
but that's creative. That's fine.
Yeah, and then it came together within like 2 hours. We got it together, and boom, we're on set. You know, like I've never cost a whole day. Not like how some people I know.
Yeah. Have you ever done this where this makes me mad when you know in your gut that the take that you just did was the take, and they used the other one?
Well, yeah.
That fucking drives me crazy.
Yeah, well, that's when you have to really make good friends.
With the editors? Like
with the director and the editor. Right. You know, I always give a shout out to the editor, always, because the editor's always forgotten about, and actors don't really think about that. But ever since, I did this one movie, it was like the very first movie I ever did, and it was so fucking horrible. And I went in, I was talking to the director, and he's like, "I'm in the edit bay, you wanna come in?" And I was sitting there and I'm listening to the editor talk about how fucking rude actors are and how disrespectful they are, and that, you know, I'm the one that really makes the movie. I'm the one that puts it all together, and no one ever gives me any respect. And like, he was just going off, yeah, not realizing that I was sitting in the corner, like listening to all this. Mm-hmm. But it was the best learning lesson for me. So every time I record something, I go, "Hey, editor, how you doing?"
Oh, I'm like, gonna do that too,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, just give them a shout out.
And hey, editor Bobby Lee.
Yeah,
was the take.
Yeah, I know you. Exactly. Yeah. Like, I know you're sitting in that dark room, all lonely, uncomfortable, staring at my face like this.
Yeah.
So I just want you to know it's all good. Like, and I make up songs for them. Like, when they're like rolling, and then the director's still trying to figure out what is going on, and I know the camera's rolling. I'm like, "So you're sitting in a room editing this situation, wondering what the fuck am I doing with my life?"
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, so then they make these reels for me. You know, every single time they make these reels of like outtakes of me singing to them, or they come to visit set, they'll like make it a point. Editors don't normally visit set.
Yeah.
They make it a point to visit set just to say, "Thank you, Tiffany. So I appreciate you."
Hey, editor.
Yep.
I am Bobby Lee, and okay, I love you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that stuff like that.
Make me look good. Don't get my lazy eye.
Because did you know this fact? Star Wars, when they first edited that movie, George Lucas showed it in front of Spielberg, De Palma, Scorsese, all his friends. And they went, after the end of the movie, they all went, "Fuck that movie. It was terrible." But he got an editor, right, to change it. And he made the action the first thing, the movement of the thing to lead the movie, and it changed the whole thing. And then when he re-showed it to people, they're like, "Oh my God, it's a masterpiece." My point is that without an editor, right, an editor can completely change the mood and the tone and the whole fucking thing.
Yeah, because you can have a really shitty script, but a dope ass editor that makes it great. Or you could have a really great script and really great DP, really great actors, but the editor ain't shit and the movie's garbage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's not moving, it's not this, they're putting the scenes in the wrong place. Like, yeah, so you really want a great editor.
I have a question. Like, how do you end up with like two people on the opposite spectrum of like behavior on set?
Well, I would say.
Do you think it's inherent or is it something that happened like, along the way?
Well, how you were raised, what you're allowed to get away with. A lot of times people are allowed to get away with bad behavior, so they consistently do it. But I really believe it has a lot to do with your parents.
Yeah.
And who you are as a person. And it's going to determine how much you work and how much you don't work.
They say
that. Do you think that a perfectly nice, well-raised human being, like faced with fame, all of a sudden can go the opposite way and turn into?
No.
I think that fame reveals you.
You'll be a dick after.
Reveals who you really are.
Yeah. Oh,
that's what it does. Okay. It shows you who you really are.
Yeah. Well, it shows the world who you really are.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, though, there's a lot of fucking guys that are crazy, that are famous, that people like because they don't show that behavior on screen, right?
No.
But it's like on set, they're like, no one lock eyes with me, right? If you touch me, I'll kill you, you know, that kind of stuff, right? But then on screen, even if they're doing a talk show, they smile and they.
Yeah, it's acting.
Yeah, it's acting, right? Yeah. And then, you know, behind closed doors, they're a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that isn't something that gets to live a long time unless you're making the studio a shitload of money. Mm. Like you got to be consistent with how much money they're making.
Are you knee deep in dick right now or no?
No.
What, because you would.
But I would like to be. I would love to be sloshing through the swamp of dicks. Figuring out which dick could be the best dick for my vagina.
Was it easier to get dick before?
Yeah, way easier to get dick before because they thought you needed them.
Yeah.
You know, men love a girl that needs to be rescued, a damsel in distress.
Wow.
You know, once you get a certain level, they think you're rich. They think you're like, well, she doesn't need me. Like, and they'll approach you. And it's like a lot of guys that approach me are gold diggers. You got your gold diggers. You got your egomaniacs that are like, yeah, I just want to be able to say I fuck Tiffany Haddish, you know. And then you got, you know, the actual good guys, but they might be not my type or boring.
Right.
And then you find maybe you might find something right in the middle.
Right.
Did you point at?
Yeah. He's a good guy, but he's no one's type. You know what I mean?
Good to me.
Yeah. No.
I like how his heart beating fast.
Look his face. Look at his face.
Heart is beating, baby. That's
the same color of his dick. Look at that.
Yeah.
You like a really pink dick like that? I don't think you'd like that.
I mean, in the dark, it's cool, but when the lights come on, you're like, oh my God, are you bleeding? No. It's just hard.
Yeah. Wow. So, That is interesting.
I don't hate those dicks, though. I love all dicks.
Have you ever had Asian dick?
Yes.
You have?
Mr. Kim, yes.
Mr. Kim? Is that your teacher?
What is he, a delivery man for a Chinese restaurant?
No, Mr. Kim was he owned racehorses and cattle, and he, like, imported, exported to Korea, like, cattle and stuff, and the horses. He would, like, train and all that stuff. He was rich as shit.
Was he Korean?
Yes.
Yeah, that's Korean.
Yeah, Korean.
And was he older?
Yeah, he was like 20 years older than me.
Wow.
And he was the first man to make me have an orgasm without actually touching my vagina.
Wow. I saw. What the fuck?
How did you do that?
How did you do that?
He feng shui the pussy some kind of. Something down.
What is happening?
Like Asians have magic.
Yeah.
That's why they got massage parlors everywhere.
Wow.
Mr. Kim was great.
What, did he live in on a ranch somewhere in L.A. or somewhere?
He had a ranch in Portland, and he had something else in, like, Utah or whatever, and he had, like, houses, 2-3 houses here in L.A.
Did you always call him Mr. Kim?
I always called him Mr. Kim. He introduced himself to me as Mr. Kim.
Wow. And,
I mean, I believe his first name was Roger or whatever.
Roger Kim.
He told me to call him Mr. Kim.
And wow. And then how did you, how would you meet a Mr. Kim?
I met him when I was working at the airlines. I was working at the airlines and my station manager introduced me to him. He's like, this is a really good, because it was funny because everybody's like, Tiffany needs a man. You need a good man like to like wrangle you in, and an older man so you can learn from him. And so my station manager introduced me to Mr. Kim, and like, yeah, we dated for probably like a year. He got me like expensive backpacks and necklaces.
Wow.
And like took me on trips and stuff.
Oh,
took me
I
to
love
the horse
Kim.
Races. I loved Mr. Kim too, and then he just disappeared.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, probably went home to his wife or something. I don't know if he had one, but I assumed that had to be it, or he died.
Oh, no. Mr. Kim, God, R.I.P. Fuck.
Yeah, he's probably alive. I don't know.
He's probably so proud of you, though.
If he remembers me.
Oh, Mr. Kim.
Do you think Mr. Kim remembers, looks up, and he's like, oh, my God.
I feel like if he's still alive, and he looks up and he goes, something about that girl.
He had an accent?
He had an accent.
Oh,
that's shit. That's
a game changer.
Wow. That's a game changer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that shows, wow.
Yeah.
A lot. Wow. It reveals a lot to you about you.
About what?
Because like, you're so open. Like most, like, first of all, can I just say this? And I'm going to, I've hit on so many black girls. They just don't like me.
It's probably the way you approach them.
So how would
you
approach
them? I would go, what's up?
That's right.
Yeah. No, that's not going to work. Just be yourself.
That's
who you are.
Right. I don't see, I get more nervous before, like, I would see a beautiful black girl.
Yeah.
And I would try to figure out what they would think that they want to hear from me. Mm-hmm. So I would think like, what's that kid that the podcast, the rapper that's friends with Awkwafina?
Dumbfounded.
Oh. I would just turn into dumbfounded. And I would, you know what I mean, try to walk that way.
He's a Korean rapper, yeah.
Baby, don't roll your eyes. I'm just being honest.
But see, the kid.
She's cringing
inside.
Hurting
my chest.
She's like, please stop, please stop.
The thing to get a woman, no matter what her race is to be yourself. Like, what would you want somebody to say to you that was coming to pick up on you?
Yeah, because but there was a white lady at the Irvine Improv. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was older. I could tell that she was like, she hung around after everyone was gone to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And she would do an Asian accent.
She waited after the
show. Oh, Miss Cherie. Oh, Miss Cherie, you're so funny. And I go, what? You know what I mean? And I would, and she kept following me in joke because we're going to go to Cheesecake Factory. She said, Miss Cherie, Miss Cherie. You know what I mean? And I was just like, even first of all, even if I was single, I would not, you know what I mean, smash. But but even if she was hot and she came up to me in that way, right?
It's disrespectful.
It's disrespectful. But that's,
so that's why you didn't pull any black women, because you out here trying to be something you're not.
It's so clear to me now, sweetie.
You know, the key to life is always be yourself. That's how you're going to win, no matter what. If you always are yourself, you're going to win.
But how the fuck?
And it's less stressful.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably have stressed yourself out over these years trying to figure out how do I fit in, when you should just be you. You're Bobby motherfucking Lee. Everybody loves you. You're fun. You will pull your dick out anywhere. You're a cool guy.
In church.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. When I was doing...
Pull his dick out for the Lord.
I just did the game show I did. And one of the shows, I was struggling. I wasn't getting laughs. And I just thought I was eating it, right? And I remember being on the side, and there was a grip. Like, it's just a guy that was there. You know, maybe he was a props guy. And I go, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, man. I'm eating it, you know what I mean, for all these people. And he just goes, dude, I don't know if you remember, but you're fucking Bobby Lee.
Yeah.
And when he said that to me, I just got back up, and I just finished the show. My point is that, you know, because of my shame and because of like my self-hatred over the years, right? But I think my mind is changing. I really do. I'm trying to re-change the thinking to be authentically me. But it's funny how you didn't go to therapy. How do you learn all that?
Well, no, don't get it twisted. Been in therapy many years. Court-ordered therapy.
Oh. Like,
but I would try to be fake. I would try to be like, oh, black girls are like this. And, oh, if I want to be a sophisticated black woman, I need to talk like this and look at people in their eyes and give a little sort of twang. You know, like all these different things I would try to do. And I realized it's hard to keep that lie up. Mm-hmm. It's frustrating and it's exhausting. And the more that fake that I tried to be, the less I would progress. But the more I would just allow myself to be Tiffany Haddish, well, the more I would progress, the more opportunities would present themselves, the more people would like me, the more people would want to help me. Wow. Like, it, so I realized, it was, and it's way less stressful. I'm 70.
I didn't even pray.
So good.
So no, good.
I just turned 40, though. I just turned 40, and like, oh, just always being able to be me has really opened up my world to all different types of people. And here's the thing, nobody really wants to see anybody, oh, you pretend to be what I am, or you, they say, like, they might say, like, oh, we only this kind of people over here, but they don't really want to just be around that kind of, they want to be around a little bit of everything.
Yeah,
people want different people around. That's how you have fun.
Yeah.
So if you're always you, nobody can be you, nobody can pretend to, you're you.
Yeah, I'm me. I'm me at the comedy clubs.
Yeah.
That's how you know me.
And that's right? What I love.
Yeah, yeah,
that's why,
yeah,
I always walk up to you and be like, hey, Bobby. Like, you know, you're like, yeah, yeah, fuck out my face. He's so crazy. He's so silly. I get him tomorrow. Next time I see him, I'm going to say something to him. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
you know, so.
Yeah.
Because I saw you on stage. I see you on stage. I know who you are.
Yeah.
But then I also see you around some of these guys, some of our colleagues, and I see you act a little different. I'm like, oh, damn, why are you doing that? Like,
yeah,
what's he doing that for?
Yeah, you know what?
I agree with you. I think that Bobby one-on-one is one of the coolest human
most
beings
beautiful
I've ever met.
Person.
Yeah, he's
you
so
are beautiful
kind
person.
And generous and attentive. And then he ups the...
Yeah, and then he gets around these dicks and he tries to be a dick and it's like... It's not who you are, bro. It doesn't fucking work.
He's man. Not a dick.
No, he's
at
not.
All.
No.
But he's a dick around other people.
Yeah, and it doesn't make any fucking sense. It's confusing. Who are you right now?
Because the thing is that when you're around some of these guys, there's a feeling, you know, with like last night I was with Spade, Callen, mm-hmm. Jeff Ross, all these guys. And when you get around it, I can feel myself. I can feel myself not being me because mainly it's because I'm trying to protect myself around them.
Uh-huh. Oh. Yeah, because you're afraid you're going to be under attack, right?
Right.
But they can't attack what's real, right. And they can try to attack it, but they'll never win the battle,
right?
Because it's real.
Yeah. Wow. I do. You know, it's so funny. You're the first comic to ever say that out loud. That I do that.
Yeah.
I observe it within myself. When I'm there and amongst them, I observe it. And then I observe myself who I'm authentically me when I'm one-on-one with even a younger comic. And I can just, like, you know, Sunday night, my MC Joe, who's a parking lot guy at the, Joe Murray's, he's a parking mm-hmm. lot guy at the store, you know him.
Yeah.
And he, no one ever asked him to go on the road with him. He's only open for one dude one time, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so, him and I, after the meal, I go, you hungry? He goes, yeah, let's go to Cheesecake Factory. We just sat there. I pay for everything, you know, and we get to talk, play games and make each other laugh and talk, you know what I mean? And I'm, but if Joe Maurice saw me with D'Elia and all these other guys, I would not shun him, but I would block him out.
Mm.
Right?
So many comics did that to me over the years.
I know.
And then they come, now they're like, hey, Tiff, what's up? And I'm like, hey.
Wow.
I treat them the way they treated me. Wow. Like, I treat people the way I want to be treated.
Yeah.
And however they treated me, well, I'm just a reflection of that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, hey, what up? Yeah. Like, you know, if you would have never came around and
kept being
me, I probably would be like, what the fuck do you want me to do?
He's not doing the podcast. Excuse
Tiger, what? Yeah.
Give you my number, why?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
You know?
But you know what? I'll be honest with you. If I didn't come around and you had blown up, I would not ever ask you. And let me say this, and this is the truth. I would probably live the rest of my life going, why did I do that?
Yeah, because he does have a lot of those relationships that he's completely blown, where he'll tuck his tail between his legs and say, you know what? I'm not even going to try because I fucked up.
Yeah, but you should be the bigger man and be like, yo, I'm apologize for that, man.
That is true.
Yeah, but
yeah.
And then walk away from it and see if they come back.
Yeah.
But to me, it's if they've blown the, like, okay, if I was really mean to somebody, which is, I can only think of maybe one at the top of my head.
Me.
No, not you. Not you. Because you're here. You're fucking here.
Yeah, we fixed it.
But I can think of one that, I can't name the name, but like that blew the fuck up, that I wasn't really that nice to. Not, I wasn't a dick, but I just remember just, you know, they would say hi, and I go, not really open my. And now this person is huge, and I don't want to go, hey, sorry, because the thing is that it's gonna make it seem
the apology has an incentive
that like I'm apologizing to get something out of it.
Well, if you ask for something right after you apologize, then yeah, that's what it's gonna seem like. But if you apologize and then move on with your existence, and you guys happen to meet up again, which will happen if you are running in the same clubs,
okay,
it'd be a different situation.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm gonna say. What's up, dude? You know, honestly, like, I don't want anything out of you. You know, I'm just here because when you were a younger guy, you know, I just was kind of like, I ignored you and I was kind of a dick a lot of times. And I just want to, congratulations. I'm really proud of you. And I just wanted to apologize for that behavior. And good luck for, is that good?
Yeah. And then keep it pushing.
And then you keep it pushing.
Keep it pushing.
I'm going to fucking do it.
You'll feel better afterwards too. You won't feel the guilt you feel or whatever you're feeling. You won't feel that anymore because you did your part. Now, if that person continues to treat you like shit or whatever, if they even treating you like anything, you know.
Yeah.
But 9 times out of 10, they will appreciate it.
Are you in a 12-step program?
Fuck no.
Because what you're saying to me right now are things that we talk about, cleaning your side of the street. It's a part of the steps, actually, to make amends in that way. You know what I mean?
It's a part of every religion, though. Yeah. Every single religion, golden rule is treat others how you want to be treated.
Yeah.
And if somebody made some mistakes and they came back to you and said, I apologize. Like if my mom would apologize to me about some of the things she said to me and did to me, well, I think our dynamic would be a lot stronger.
Mm. You know, you're so right. After 35 years, my mom finally apologized to me 2 weeks ago for all the shit. It was like an umbrella statement too. It was like, look, I'm sorry. And it took 35 years, but I didn't realize that's all I needed to hear. Something so simple.
Just
and it relieved me. It was like this thing. My chest felt light again. And all of a sudden, I could feel myself treating her differently. In 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is your mom not a part of your life right now?
Oh, no. My mom is definitely a part of my life. Yeah. I had to realize that she had a brain injury. She has mental illness. That, you know, I might not ever get an apology from her, but I need to realize, you know, how I treat her might be how, if I have children or I adopt kids or if somebody decides they want to take care of them, that's how they're going to treat me.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you give, that's what you get back. So, like in my book, I talk about like, hopefully I make enough money where I can get her out the mental institution, get her in a place and hire other people to deal with her ass.
Yeah.
And I don't have to deal with it. And that is what I have done. Like I got her the best nurses, the best doctors. I'm watching her transform, having realizations, writing letters about the guilt that she's felt about not raising her children, about putting all this on me. She says not apologized, but what she has done is like the one thing I've been like, you know, doing all. So I wonder like a lot of times, am I doing all this just for her approval? Mm. And kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, the first time I ever was on television doing stand-up was Bill Bellamy's Who's Got Jokes. And I showed it to her and she was in an institution and her response was, my coochie makes stars. And I thought to myself, this is going to be the closest thing I get to I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And
then.
And that was what, the 14, 15 years ago. And then recently, you know, I took her to the premiere of Night School and she got to see Kevin Hart and all these people, you know, saying that they love me, they appreciate me, that they're glad that, you know, she's my mom. Like, you know, they're giving her love. And at the end of the night, she gave me the biggest hug and she said, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. That's what I was like enough for me to be like, okay, whatever I'm investing in her is worth it.
Yeah.
You know, I still want my fucking apology though, mom.
Yeah.
That time you beat me on my feet with the fucking back scrubber, like I really want.
Yeah,
you ain't, you want to know pain? Get whooped on the bottom of your feet. You can feel it in every organ of your entire body. I want her to apologize for that. Will she ever? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still can feel the pain. When I think of it, it's like, it fucking hurts in my intestines. You know, I shit it on myself. It was bad.
Yeah.
But it I understand pain. I understand what real hurt is and what people try to inflict on me on the internet or they try to destroy my name or destroy my career. It's nothing compared to the first person I ever loved. My mother is the first person I ever loved and the first person to destroy my soul, like destroy my heart. So anybody who don't know me and you want to talk shit about me, go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're making me more popular. You're introducing me to your 17 followers. Yeah. Like, go for it.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't hurt me no more than I've already been hurt.
I think you might be causing me an emotional breakdown.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Because everything that you're saying is exactly the same thing I went through with my mom, where it's like, it was so deep, my love for her. I remember telling her, like, I could never love a boy more than I love you. But she was the one person that just always made my mouth bleed, always belittled me, always did these things to just break me down as a child. And that whole chasing the love thing just is perpetuated when you're an adult.
Yeah, you keep reenacting your childhood. It's a pattern.
And I think ultimately I always look back at her to see if there's some level of approval there, you know, and you're not, maybe you'll never get an apology, but you're not wrong about that apology feeling like the most healing thing in the world.
Right, it is. I don't know if she'll ever apologize. And that's another thing I had to learn, like, probably about 5 or 6 years ago. Like, I can't expect someone who hurt me to apologize.
Yeah.
I have to apologize to myself first for allowing myself to even be in that situation. Because I think you can remove yourself, especially now, like, kids can call the police and they'll be put in a different home immediately. So if you're in a situation that is tumultuous, that is hurtful, that is bad, and you allow yourself to stay there, you have to apologize to yourself
but
first.
But Tiffany, you're a child.
Yeah, but...
You're a child.
I know, but still.
Yeah.
But still, you know, I know you're a child and I don't know any better.
You were in this situation, you're a victim and you're the innocent one, right? And it happened to you and you're a child. And I don't see, even when I was, see that box right there?
Mm-hmm.
There's a box.
Here, bring him to me.
No, don't bring him to me. Just show it. See, that's my dad. Mm-hmm. He died in mm-hmm. August, mm-hmm. okay? That dude used to beat me with golf clubs, knock my mom's teeth out. And a month ago, my mom goes, he told me that he regrets how he, you know what I mean? She told me, right? And I never got an apology for him. And I used to blame myself my whole life.
Yeah.
Right? Because I feel like I deserved it. I didn't deserve it.
No.
No, we were innocent, right? Children. But and what?
Look, the dog on top of it.
You know what that is on top of it? I had to go to an institution a month ago because I wanted to die.
I know that feeling.
I wanted to die. And so when I went to the therapy place in Arizona, they made me go to a Build-A-Bear and build my original child.
Mm.
So that's me, innocent Bobby Lee, I mean, with none of the trauma, just wanted to be nurtured and loved and all that stuff. That's what we are.
Yeah.
When we're born.
Yeah.
You know? But your did mom did make a star maker.
Yeah, well.
She crushed it.
Yeah.
She killed it.
She killed it.
Yeah.
That's a good line, though. My coochie makes stars.
My coochie makes stars. Yeah, yeah. When I met Matthew McConaughey, I asked him if his mom looks at him and goes, "My pussy makes stars." You ever look at you and be like, "Look what my pussy did."
He probably went, all right. Was he nice?
But yeah, he was super nice. He's like, I don't know if that's what she thinks, but I'm sure going to ask her.
Yeah. That dude, man, is such a good fucking actor.
Yeah.
Oh,
and he's a good
God.
Person, too, from what I gathered from my few interactions with him. He seems like a great human.
No, I don't want to. You don't have to name names, but have you been in situations where you've worked somebody that you didn't care for?
Or uh-huh.
How do you do that?
How do you work with them? You just say, okay, this is one of those jobs that, you know, this is a dickhead coworker. And, you know, I just kill people with kindness.
Yeah.
I just keep treating them the way I want to be. Even though I know they're purposely trying to fuck with me, I know they're trying to, like, get something out of me, I won't allow it.
Yeah.
But then when I get to my hotel room, I'm like, that stupid bitch don't know me. I fuck her ass up. Who the fuck she thinks she is? Oh, crazy ass bitch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I get to work, I'm like, hey, girl.
Yeah.
Want to run these lines?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I been in series with people that I just fucking, you know what I mean? I don't know how to do it right because what I end up doing is I shut down.
Yeah, well, I have shut down not too long ago. I shut down and because I was gonna lose it. I was like, I'm gonna end up going to jail today. Today gonna be the day.
Yeah.
I try to fight somebody who I shouldn't be trying to fight. because I got my, my hood instincts. I am from South Central, so you can only say so many things to me. You can only push me so far before I snap.
Yeah.
Right? And so then I let people know, too. I'm like, I let the director know, DP know, two producers. Today going to be the day y'all going to have to escort me.
Yeah.
Today going to be the day, because this person
yeah, yeah.
is pushing the wrong button today.
Yeah.
My period must be about to start, because I'm about to make somebody bleed like me.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, let's rearrange this. Yeah.
I love it when, like, the producers know, too, and everyone knows, so they sympathize with you.
Well, they see it.
They see it, yeah.
They see
yeah,
the mistreatment. Yeah. They see the disrespect. They see it. And they know they wouldn't tolerate it. And my whole thing on that one show that I was on, I was like, if I was a white woman, y'all would not allow this person to talk to me like this. If I was a white woman, none of this would be tolerated. This person wouldn't even be on this show if I was a white woman. Y'all would have fired that person a long time ago.
Yeah.
But y'all want to allow this to keep happening? Yeah. Keep on letting it happen. Watch what happens, because I got a big fucking mouth. I will put their ass on blast.
You know the NRA thing they just had in Charlotte? Oh, it was in Virginia, whatever. And you see...
You looked at George.
400. You know what it is. You see 400, you know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right-wing dudes walking down the street with AK machine guns, just walking right mm-hmm. to this rally, right? With bazookas. I mean, whatever it is. They look like commandos, right?
Yeah, Joe's, yeah.
If they were black...
If they were black, Asian, and Hispanic... They would have all been shot down. They would have sent a jet and dropped bombs on them motherfuckers. They're like, if we lost a few white people, sorry, but it was too many minorities with guns.
Yeah, that's not even a joke. That's fucking reality. That is what would fucking happen.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to talk about like a double standard, or you want to talk about, I mean, things have changed a lot.
They have.
I mean, I've even in my own career, I can feel, oh, like I just sold a show to CBS and. Before this, you know, when I was after Mad TV and that 10 years I didn't work, they wouldn't even see me, right? So I can feel now that they want shit from me, right? And they want, but so I know that there is a change. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Hollywood.
Yeah.
But my point, though, is that the country really hasn't, right? There still is this, you know, all you have to do, white people, right? You. All right, you represent it.
Yeah.
All right,
tell everybody.
What can you just
tell all the other white people? I know you guys have a special hotline, a blog where y'all talk. Tell them this.
Why can't people just put themselves in other people's shoes? It's like you see these. What's in Syria? Not Syria, but there's a somewhere in the Middle East where Yemen. There's famine going on. Yeah, what?
Yemen.
Mm-hmm. And you see these kids dying from starvation. Right. You put yourself in. I can do that.
Yeah.
Can't you do that? White people, can't you do that? Not all white. Most white people are good. Oh, that's what I was saying.
Yeah. That's what you want.
I work with so many great white people. They're so good. You know what I mean?
Some people don't have souls. Some people were never taught compassion.
Right.
They were never talking about it. They was just taught that you're the best. I'm the best. Everybody does what we want.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
We run this.
Wow.
So that's
But see, what's a miracle is that you and I I'm not saying that one's worse than the other. You probably, mm-hmm. I don't know, whatever, but you know, it's all relative.
Bad. Yeah, it's bad, right?
But I was still able to have, because a lot of people that experience those kind of childhoods, mm-hmm. some people go wrong, but some people, like me, when it was happening to me, I felt the injustice of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And instead of like, you know what I mean? So whenever there's injustice going on in the world, I'm the first to like, you know what I mean? That's not fair.
Right.
But it all stems from me being abused as a kid, because I remember like...
Feeling powerless.
You know, right. I remember when, you know, the cat story, my mom got me a cat and then my dad gave it away a month later without any explanation. Mm-hmm. And I had no say in it. The injustice. And I lived with that. So I turned that into... So whenever I see... You know what I mean? These kind of things going on in the world, I'm the first, but I don't know if that's healthy. I don't think it's healthy.
Well, there's some people that never had anything, no struggle, no abuse, no nothing to even know what that feels like. injustice. They don't know what that even feels like.
Yeah.
They might see it on TV, but that's not my life. Everything's fair for me. Everything works out for me. Yeah. I have an inheritance. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get lands. I'm going to get this.
Yeah.
As soon as I graduated from high school, I'm working at my dad's firm. I got this. Like, they get everything. So they have nothing to compare it to. They haven't learned that.
Yeah.
That's why I'm glad when they implemented, if you want to graduate from high school, you got to do community service. I'm glad they implemented that, because what I would say about a lot of the millennials, even though they don't really work hard, they do have compassion.
They do.
A lot of the youth do have compassion.
They do. Greta Thunberg.
No, but even like my nieces and nephews in middle school and high school now, they're kinder kids.
Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because the whole bullying campaign and seeing the results of that and what we're teaching the children now from what we've been through.
Yeah.
You know, that helps a lot. But there's still a lot of people that is fucked up, but I haven't met one person that's successful that hasn't had some kind of struggle, especially when it comes to women. Some kind of struggle, some kind of abuse, some kind of something had to happen before they could get to the next level.
Can I propose an idea?
We do a show about the struggle.
No. It's not a pitch of a show, but it's more. I always thought that the bullying that I, even my dad, but the bullying that I received in high school or whatever, or middle school, right? I don't look at it as a negative thing, though. I look at it as a positive, because it really did make me grow a layer of skin.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me go, this is, without this idea, I don't know if I would have survived in this business. You'll see that thought.
Yeah.
I'll show you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make it.
That you are right about that.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be where I'm at if I didn't have to watch this.
Watch this.
You're going to see. Oh, you don't think I can do it?
Yeah.
Watch me do it.
Yeah.
That feeling, you're right about that.
Right. So what I'm saying is that if you get rid of, you know what I mean, those things, we'll still, like, I don't know if I had a great upbringing, if I was never bullied and I was white. I don't know if I would have been, you know, because I know a lot of white dudes. I started with stand-up. I can even name you the name. I won't, right? But, yeah, I will. Jonathan Gottsick, Joey Marmo.
Nobody knows them.
Yeah. I know. But, like, after, like, 5 or 6 years, like, we got to go back to Connecticut. Yeah, I'm going to get a teaching job.
Yeah.
And you're like, I still have to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that thought was because I think I was like, I had to struggle as a kid and survive. And I don't know, I mean.
Or you could just be like George Kimmel. No abuses, great parents, great upbringing.
He got some struggles, he not sharing.
Oh.
I've asked him this question and he says
you're
no.
You were horse fucked.
Oh, that's what it was.
No. I'm horse fucked? Tiffany, I've asked him so many times.
I looked
I'm
in
like,
his
what?
Eyes, he got hurt in there. He just not sharing.
You know what? You know what the hurts
a lot
from?
Of white men know how to suppress it, and then they assert it in different ways.
Like it comes out of new jackets like that.
What is that, a members only? What is that? It's members only without the sign. Members only. What is that? What?
Suede.
This
he
fucking
uses his
guy.
Aggression to fuck the pussy up. Yeah,
whoa.
You know what? He only fucks minorities, though.
Mm, well.
Have you ever had a white girlfriend, George?
This is a big misconception.
You've had Indian, you've had black, you've had Asian, Korean, Chinese, everything.
Yeah.
When was your last white girlfriend? See? It's already too long.
Don't ask him. He doesn't have a fucking mic.
She wouldn't date me. So then I had to wait until it all came full circle. Oh, God.
My sister is laughing so hard.
Oh, my God.
It's so funny
it sounds like he only likes to date women that have souls.
There you go, George.
You're a soul fucker. That's what it is.
Something different from him that he can learn from, probably. Teach you compassion, right?
You know what? That is a cool thing about you, though, dude. That you mean that you like. You really do. Because you know how I met him? I was, you know, when I was, like, after Mad TV, I couldn't get anything going. So, you know, my friend Lisa started a company called Maker Studios, and she goes, come on in and, you know, see if some of these producers will write with you. And I went in, and he was pretty much the only one that was super excited to work with me. I could feel it, man. I didn't want him.
He got a good soul, though.
Yeah, he does.
He has zero pop-off potential. Like, yeah. If I get enraged or someone does, I feel the injustice, and I will go after them.
Yeah.
He is so even-keeled all the time.
Maybe when he at home alone. Probably talking big shit. Using the N-word.
George, stop George, doing that. Do that.
George. I'm going to give you a compliment, dude. This is so hard to say. I honestly am so lucky and blessed that I found you.
If you ask him to marry you right now, I'm going to slap the shit out of you.
Yeah. I suck your dick. No, honestly, dude, you work so hard. And you can absorb a lot of my fucking craziness. And I just, yeah, man.
Tell him you love him.
I love you, man. You're going to Cirque du Soleil tonight, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, the new one?
Yeah.
Ooh. What is it called?
That's Let Me Look.
It's with a V. It's with a, it's not Voltron, but it sounds like that.
Cirque du Soleil. Volta.
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 Yes. I heard about that.
I don't know. It's going to be at Dodger Stadium, so I'm excited.
What are we doing at time?
We're over an hour.
So. I know that we are. You just killed it.
Mm-hmm.
You killed it.
No. Shut. Let me give you a compliment.
I love you.
We do a thing at the end. It's called Unhelpful Advice, so people ask us one question about a problem they're going through, and we can either be helpful or not helpful.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Unhelpful advice with Tiffany Haddish. Hey, she's a coochie star.
I've recently fallen in love with my best friend, and I feel really wonderful.
Do it again.
That voice.
Yeah.
Tiffany Haddish.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's up? I've recently fallen in love with my best friend. I really feel wonderful about our future together. However, I broke up with my ex about 6 months prior, who is super hot and super insane. And still, I can't stop thinking about my hot, crazy ex when I'm masturbating. My current girlfriend is beautiful and great in bed as well, so I'm not sure why my brain goes to my ex. But it does, and it's great. Should I tell my current girlfriend about this?
No.
Or will this go away over time? Am I in denial about being unsatisfied, or maybe just gross or territorial about my ex? What should I think or do? Chris from Milwaukee.
The ex must have sucked his dick.
Weird.
Ex must have sucked that dick from the back and closed that booty hole. That bitch must have ripped his nipples, did some crazy shit.
Yeah.
Damn.
I want to say this is, and don't be offended, Kalila.
Yeah,
I've been with Kalila for 7 years, and I've probably masturbated. 365 days times seven is what?
A lot.
Thousands, right? Probably five times I've thought about Kalila.
Yeah, that does not offend me. I know.
What I'm saying is, it's natural.
You think I've ever masturbated to you in my life? Never.
Point, I've never masturbated to anybody I was dating.
Exactly. We don't do that. Who does that?
No one does that.
I imagine something better.
Yeah.
Better than I've ever had.
Yeah.
Right.
The man that I'm masturbating to is in here. Not even a real human.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is natural. Mm-hmm. And have I masturbated about past sexual experiences a couple of times, maybe.
I think it's normal. I don't think that it's anything. Like, it's just, you know, when you masturbate and you're by yourself, like, we're not supposed to judge people by, you know, what they do on their alone time.
Do you use your hand or a machine?
Both.
Wow. At the same time?
No.
Oh.
That's ridiculous.
Depends on where I'm at. Do I have fresh batteries?
Yeah.
Did I pack my tools? Sometimes I forget to pack it, and then I'm like, well, here comes carpal tunnel. Shake my hands out like this and get it going.
Yeah. Are you doing stand-up anymore or no?
Yeah. I just headlined some theaters.
Oh, good. Good. No, theaters. I mean, because you're so... No, what I'm saying is you're so busy... Right?
I'm busy killing comedy.
What? All right.
I mean, I'm doing a comedy tour right now. You can go on TiffanyHaddish.com, see where my next tour dates are. A lot of the shows are sold out already.
Yeah, of course.
And some aren't, and that would be cool if people came to them. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about a lot of the stuff that we talked about today. But I haven't done a lot of clubs.
Yeah, don't. Unless you want to go try new shit.
Yeah, I want to try new shit.
Right.
Like, I like to pop into the Laugh Factory. I used to pop into the Comedy Store all the time, but then I realized I don't think they like me that much there. My name's not really? On the wall. I've never been given the veils. Yeah.
Well, you know what? That's going to change right now.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That's going to change right fucking now. I'm going to tell you that right now. You're promoting a movie too, right? Coming up?
Yeah, I got a movie that's out. It came out a week and a half ago called Like a Boss.
Yes.
Starring Rose Byrne, Salma Hayek, and myself.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was,
watch that movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie. It was fun to make too. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, black people are even laughing. They think it's hilarious.
They think
it's funny. You know, it's pretty funny.
Tiffany, I honestly, not only did we just enjoy our fucking asses off here, you killed it. It's just being with you and learning more about you. And it was a real pleasure.
It's a pleasure for me, too. Every time I get to be around you, it's always like an elevation of our friendship and our relationship as coworkers and whatnot. It's always grow when I'm around you.
Give her a round of applause. Give her a fucking round of applause.
Yes, because I got to pee, and I'm out.
Be right there. We got to take a photo real quick.
Hey guys, thank you for joining us with Tiffany Hanisch. Welcome to The Housekeeping. Big shout out to our sponsors, Calm, BetterHelp, ShipStation, and Brooklinen. For a limited time, get 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/belly. George, why don't you do number two? Get 10% off your first month.
I don't have the paper because I gave you mine because you lost yours.
BetterHelp.com/belly. Get this year off to a great start at ShipStation.com. Use the code belly for a 60-day free trial. Get 10% off your first order and free shipping on all new sheets when you use the promo code TIGER, only at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com. And guys, make sure you check out the Slept King Live. Bobby will be in Schaumburg, Illinois, Feb 13th through 16th, San Jose, California, February 28th through March 1st, Denver, March 12th through 14th, and Houston, Texas, March 27th through 29th. Get your tickets at BobbyLeeLive.com. And to get your question on Tiger Belly, by emailing us at adviceunhelpful@gmail.com. We're looking for interesting, unusual, non-typical problems, and we need your help as much as you want ours. That's adviceunhelpful@gmail.com. Any shout-outs, George, for this week? Anyone from the Irvine Improv that saw you?
Oh, I was going to do a reverse shout-out to, what's his name? But it might have not been him.
The rapper Nelly?
No, I tried to sneak into a fight party that wasn't mine. And got Ian Butler. Ian Butler, he said it was cool, but his friend then kicked me out, so I got me kicked out. So, reverse shout.
Yeah.
Hey. Housekeeping, Bobby.
What is house cleaning again?
I'm not a part of it.
Well, your mic's on, so they're here all the time. Anyways, guys, thank you for listening to the podcast. That was Bobby. Who just entered. We love you so much. Make sure you follow us on Instagram at Tiger Belly, on Twitter at @TheTigerBelly. You can follow Kalila. I don't know, man. I need some coffee. You can follow Kalila at Calamity K. You can follow George Kimmel at...
Gabs a Million.
Follow George at Gabs a Million. You can follow everything Bobby Lee at Gilbits. All right, guys, have a good night. We love you. Bye.